This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So we turn to Thought Council for now, and quite ironic because we are just above the council chambers here. Today on Thought Council, we are going to be talking about understanding mental health. I do know that some people have been saying, let us place focus on this, and Entle prodding us quite a few times. But also, the events that have taken place in our country have really shone the spotlight on the issue of mental health and how do we deal with it from childhood right up into our mature ages. And we've seen a lot of things happening, whether there is enough care available, there are enough institutions available, there is enough social space for us to talk and destigmatize questions around, you know, living with depression, anxiety, and other forms of mental illnesses. And this is continuing to be a great health challenge, but not just a health challenge, because it affects us in our functionality, it affects us in our ability to go on the day-to-day business that we should be doing as fully functional human beings. But I'm going to be joined by my guests on the line. So let me welcome Nadine Dex. She's project leader, SA Federation for Mental Health. Nadine, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for making the time. I welcome also Casey Chambers, who is also Operations Director at SADAG, that is the South African Depression and Anxiety Group. Casey, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me and on this important topic. Thank you.
Thank you for making the time. Lerato Machetela is a clinical psychologist. Lerato, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning and thank you very much for having me on the show. I must say I feel quite privileged to be part of this panel, which focuses on unpacking pertinent issues, which are not only relevant to the current South African context, but also sit as unsettling worms at the core of our existence. So once again, very important conversation, which has direct impact. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Thank you so much. Casey, perhaps let me start off with you and the work you do at SADAG. When you look at South Africa and the challenges that we have in dealing with mental health-related issues, depression, anxiety, and so much more, somebody asked a few days ago, are we seeing more cases? Is the spread of concerns with mental health real, or it's because more people are talking about it? Where are we as a country?
And that's such a good question. And I think, you know, from SADAG's experience, what we can share from our side of what we're seeing from people calling our helplines is that, you know, I think we also have to note that we're dealing with a global pandemic, which has really just increased everyone's anxiety and stress and adjustments and depression. You know, we're navigating this on a daily basis, and especially 12 months later. You know, it's a very long time, and the impact of COVID has really just affected every aspect of our life. But from SADAG's perspective and what we've seen in the call center, that just before lockdown, we were receiving about 600 calls per day from people around the country accessing help. And then the global pandemic, and everyone was getting ready for a hard lockdown. Mm. And I still remember the first day of our hard lockdown in South Africa was also the first day that reported the first COVID death. And I think that also triggered a lot of people. The lockdown was scary, and we saw our call volumes literally double overnight to 1,200 calls per day. Mm. We're now even seeing a year later 1,400 calls plus a day from people around the country who have just, you know, grief, trauma, dealing with unemployment, worried about their families, anxiety, depression. So from our side, yes, we've seen a huge increase in anxiety and depression. And we're getting a lot of calls since last March, we've received over 500,000 calls to our helpline. And concerning is out of that 500,000, 100,000 calls are related to suicide. So, yes, I think when we're looking at the mental health of our country, it's affected a lot of people dealing with the pandemic. And it's an important topic. You know, you mentioned, you know, is it that we're just hearing more about it and people are talking about it? Yes. I think also in the last few days, we've seen a lot of really high profile South Africans come out and say, I have depression or I have anxiety or I'm on treatment. And I think one of the positive things is that it actually encourages more people to speak about mental health. And that's how we destigmatize it and normalize conversations around this illness that affects, from what we know from research, 1 in 3 South Africans. So there's a lot more people, a lot more South Africans that are living with mental health issues. So if we can normalize these conversations, get more people to get help, we have less people suffering in silence. And that's what we hope for.
Nadine, talking about normalizing these conversations, some people might say language is also important when we deal with issues of mental health. How should we be in conversation, and what type of language should we use? Because, you know, sometimes when I say mental illness, I sometimes feel uncomfortable using that term. Are there certain phrases that we can use that would allow the opening up of the space for us to deal with this issue and ensure that not only there's no stigmatization, but that there is a language that is accessible and still dignified that doesn't make people feel like they are a problem or have a problem?
Well, you know, I think that what you're saying is very, very important. And it's hard, you know, because we all speak different languages. And so it's hard to find one universal way of destigmatizing in terms of language. But, you know, of course, there are ways of speaking that creates more stigma than is necessary, you know. So using words to describe someone and you're referring to someone as crazy, insane, a lunatic, those sorts of things are not okay in any way, shape, or form. And then I think, you know, if we are just kind in our approach to how we are receiving other people, it will make someone more comfortable to talk to you. And in talking to you, they will show you how they want to be treated and what they are referring to their mental illness or mental struggles, whatever they're going through as, you know. So I think it's important to listen to the people who are saying, you know, I'm dealing with this, I have a mood disorder, or, you know, I have bipolar. We need to start listening to people and not being so, you know, we want to prescribe what people should call things or whatever. You know, I think language that is inclusive is important.
Now, Lerato, let me bring you in here. For some time, we've almost normalized calling people in your profession, clinical psychologists, shrinks. And this, you know, tends to give off some attitude if you say, I'm going to see a shrink. And then it's like, oh, why are you going there? How accessible has it become now to, you know, visit a psychologist? And when you look around these services, do you think that they are easy to access, particularly to those people who may not have resources for private health attention?
You know, that is a very, very important and pertinent question. I think before I even speak about accessibility, I think one of the most important things that goes hand in hand with accessibility still goes back to stigma related to having a mental health diagnosis, irrespective of what the diagnosis is. I mean, when we think of accessibility, yes, the reality is that within the private sector, the cost of mental health care can be quite pricey, but at the same time, there are qualified and very helpful services within the government sector for people that are at the secondary echelon of society or the more marginalized population. If you go to your clinics or your government hospital, and a lot of the times it also goes with lack of awareness of what is going on with you. And this goes further into psychoeducation about issues of mental health, because a lot of the times people suffer in silence. So you go to the hospital or you go to the clinic and you really speak about physical symptoms, but really do we dig into addressing some of the psychological components that are there? And what a lot of people are not aware of is, even if you are in the marginalized spectrum of society, it's at your clinic, at your local clinic, they do realize that you have mental health diagnosis. They refer you to a clinical psychologist. And for those that do not have a clinical psychologist within the direct areas, they arrange for transport to go to the nearest hospital to be able to get services. And I'm also glad to hear that we've got SADAG here, because it also has a lot of satellite offices throughout South Africa. And accessibility, I mean, a lot of people these days are accessible, have accessibility to telephones or mobile phones. So it becomes easier to also get into contact with people like SADAG. And I've also, you know, learned that they also have SMS lines or WhatsApp lines. So that's also another way of accessibility in terms of mental health.
Now, Casey, I mean, the work that you do, when you talk about 1,200 to 1,400 calls a day, that probably gives you, that puts you at a pole position to harvest some kind of research. When we talk about the drivers of people needing to call your line, needing assistance, thinking that they are suffering from one form of mental illness or the other, or a situation that they fear might lead them to depression, anxiety, and other forms of mental illness. When you look at that data you have, what would you say are some of the key drivers or things that people are dealing with, which could be root causes in our society that we need to tackle?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, having, again, data and evidence is so important. And especially for SADAG, where we track on a daily basis our calls, why people are calling, what issues they're dealing with, and kind of navigate to find resources and support and try to fix the problem. So when we get calls from people who aren't able to access medication in their community, then we investigate and find out why, what happened, and we call. And I think, you know, from watching, just seeing how the calls and the trends have changed from the beginning of lockdown, where a lot of people were just really anxious and adjusting to staying at home and the fear and uncertainty. But as the months have gone on and the impact of COVID has really affected people, we've seen people calling in initially depression, isolation, loneliness, that now even in 2021, with the start of the new year, we also had the second wave, and we saw a huge spike in the number of people reaching out because of grief, losing loved ones, not being able to say goodbye, dealing with a very difficult start to the year, no schooling, work, unemployment. I mean, there's normally a combination of issues that lead to someone calling us or reaching out for help. And I think the top five that we would have to look at now from the last couple of months is relationship problems, financial stress, work stress or unemployment, so worried about how to find a job, not getting a job, as well as just dealing with grief and trauma. And all of this just really compounds to make people feel often overwhelmed and not sure where to go, who to speak to, how to access help, and just needing to connect with someone and talk about what they're going through, and putting an action plan together. And that's something that our counselors do on the phone, is that we speak to people, we offer the telephone counseling, but also giving resources in their communities, action plans, let's do this and then that. And it's just really helping people step by step. You know, mental health, and as Lerato mentioned earlier, it's kind of the stigma, where to go, who to speak to, and do I feel comfortable to go out, and do I want others to know? All of these different things really do come in and factor how people access help. And again, when we look at the stats in South Africa, only 1 in 10 South Africans have access to mental health treatment and resources. So for us, that's one of the biggest challenges, is really just getting people to help.
Now, Nadine, at times people will not pick up the line to SADC. They might go to the nearest person they feel confident to talk to, whether a friend, a cousin. How do you advise people in society who some are approached by those who want to confide to treat the friend or the family member who's approaching them, because they are not trained, mm-hmm. but how they respond could actually exacerbate the problem rather than help mm-hmm. it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, if we look in cases like, you know, what we've seen in the past couple of days alone, you know, tragedy is nothing and how heartbreaking it is with, I mean, Lufuno, for example. I think when people are giving you information, I think it's important to take it seriously. If someone is being bullied, take it seriously. If someone is coming to you with an issue, you know, and needing to vent or needing to talk, I think it's important to listen if you have the capacity to do so. I just think sometimes people just need to talk. That's all they need to do. And then, you know, it's important for us to hold that space for other people when they need that, so that it doesn't get to a point where, you know, this person is so overwhelmed. They have all of these things going on in their heads and, you know, they have no way to put it. And so I think absolutely, you know, what you're saying about making the problem worse, it happens. Sometimes someone will tell a family member that they're feeling suicidal, and instead of, you know, helping the person, they'll be scolded, they'll be whatever, you know, and it doesn't help. It doesn't help anyone, because at the end of the day, all it does is push the person away and makes them feel even more isolated than they did before. So the way we respond to people is really important, and I think if you are not in a position yourself to kind of hold that space for someone else, I think it's important then to tell someone that and tell someone, okay, I can't do this for you, but here's a helpline. Maybe call that person. These are trained people who will be able to hold that space for you and talk to you and help you through whatever you're going through. So, yeah, absolutely, language and you know, not rushing people off, I think, is key here.
Okay, this is our Thought Council this Thursday morning, understanding mental health. I have my guests here. If you have been listening and you can be part of this conversation on 0861-987-000. As always, you can tweet me at Lukhona Mnguni, hashtag Power Talk. Lerato, let me bring you in here. Probably the difficult one to deal with is depression in children, to tell the truth, because it might not be so easy even for parents to be able to pick it up. And my experience when I talk to some friends, even family members, is that at times they point out issues they are dealing with today to when they were 6, 7, and nobody dealt with those issues, and they carry different sentiments of resentment and burdens of the past. How do we tackle depression in children, and what are some of the signs that we ought to be looking out for?
You know, Lukhanya, that is a very, very important question, because, you know, on the greater spectrum of mental health, children's mental health tends to be highly ignored. We tend to believe that children are resilient. And I mean, if that is quite true, that children are resilient, why is it that we have multiple generations of people that are still healing from childhood traumas or things that have happened in their childhood? So, which is why this becomes pertinent. So in terms of children, but let me start in terms of depression as a whole. It becomes important to recognize that depression is not just one entity. A lot of the times we tend to reflect on depression, or we tend to see depression as sadness, as, you know, as sadness. And a lot of the times when somebody does not exhibit those signs of sadness, then we tend to overlook it. So in children, it will come across as headaches. If your child consistently complains of headache and you go to the doctor, they're not picking up anything organic or medical, that is also a big sign. So headache, if your child complains of tummy ache or a lot of somatic complaints or body complaints, if your child cries over small things that they would usually not cry over, and if they get angry or if they start to isolate themselves, if you find that this child, you know, your child used to like going to play with friends and suddenly they no longer enjoy playing with friends, they'd rather be alone, or they consistently sleeping, or just their mood just seems to have lots of interest in a lot of things, and aggression as well. Those are some of the symptoms that we can pick up for depression in children as well, and also nightmares and their sleeping patterns as well. If you know, your child sleeps longer than you usually expect them to sleep, or they sleep shorter times, or in between as they're sleeping, they tend to wake up a lot, and sudden onset of bedwetting, change in appetite, if they start to eat a little less or eat a little more than what you would normally get used to, those are some of the warning signs that there might be something that's not emotionally well with them. And due to lack of language or understanding of what is going on with them, they tend to ruminate, you know, and so the actions start to be more somatic or behavioral, as opposed to what we understand depression to look like in adults.
Now, Lerato, while you talk on that, in some instances, parents do take their children and say they are noticing something is not okay. They want to consult. They take their children, but children just don't want to talk. What would your advice be to some of the parents who have tried to get assistance for their children, but the children get there, they don't want to talk? And partly because, unlike adults, adults tend to voluntarily go because they consciously feel like there's something that they want to get sorted with their mental health. Children might be feeling a little coerced. How would you say parents should deal with children in that predicament?
I think it's always important to refer your child to a professional to have a proper assessment and management of some of the symptoms that might be emerging. And I like the fact that, you know, we've been talking a lot about mental health or health as a whole, and not much is being said about wellness. I think if we start getting into a culture of promoting wellness, which is more on a spectrum, and looking into holistic well-being, we would then move more into a preventative approach as opposed to more of a curative approach or a mechanistic approach of wanting to fix something when it's already there, as opposed to really moving towards the spectrum of wellness.
I'm just going to ask my guests to just hold that thought, Lerato. I'm just going to ask my guests to stay on the line, and you can join in after news headlines on 0861-987-000. Don't go away. We still bring you this Thought Council on Mental Wellness.
Power Talk with Lukhona Mbune. Call Lukhona on 0861-987-000.
Okay, and tweet me at Lukhona Mbune, hashtag Power Talk, on this Thought Council, where we are dealing with understanding mental health. I am joined on the line by Nadine Dex from SA Federation for Health for Mental Health, and Lerato Machetela, a clinical psychologist, and Casey Chambers from SADEG. And we will be going to the lines, and I'll just, before I do that, ask Lerato to complete the point she was making before I went to news headlines. Lerato?
Oh, I think I kind of forgot my trail of thought. But if I can just finish off, you know, I remember you spoke about the language that's needed for mental health.
Yes.
And you know, I think language gives power. So it lays a net which allows us to connect at the site of being human. So it allows principles of Ubuntu. So it really doesn't matter so much how it's being said, so long as people understand different categories of diagnosis. Because the more we keep changing to fit certain understandings, the more at the end of the day we are going to lose sight of what it is that we are going to communicate. Now the question also becomes, is it how we say it, or is it how as humans we should start to listen to the other?
Okay. Casey, as before I go to Ayanda on the line, just quickly from your side, I mean, I was listening to the things that you were citing as part of the data and evidence that you are getting from some of the people you deal with. Often it seems we individualize the issue of mental health rather than see it as part of the broader society. How can we make sure that we move the discussion on mental health away from just the individuals who may be living with one condition or the other, and see it as part of the discourse on development of the country as a whole?
And I think I'd like to lead in with that there is no health without mental health. Mental health affects every household, every community. So we also have to look at having these conversations in our communities, in our homes, in our schools, in our workplaces. It impacts so many aspects of how our society is set up. So having more of these conversations, sharing resources, giving people living with a mental health issue a place to share their story. And that could be someone living with an illness. It could be a family member or loved one also sharing. We're having to have more of these conversations. There is so much stigma, as we've all been talking about. We're too afraid to talk about it. There's this taboo that you're crazy or you're less than or that you're weak. And we're having to make mental health a priority, both in our communities, in our schools, in our workplaces, in our homes. It's so important that we're talking about it from a community level. And that's one thing that we know in South Africa is not yet there, is that we don't have a strategy for community mental health. So how are we expected to tackle this if we haven't brought it to our communities and for everyone to adopt and see the importance around it? And this is both from the grassroots levels of where it affects people on a daily basis, but also up to our national government level. If we're all singing from the same hymn sheet, if we all are saying mental health is important, it's a priority, it's going to change how we actually treat people with a mental health issue and how we prioritize treatment for mental health in our communities.
Absolutely. Let me take Ayanda on 0861-987-000. Ayanda, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, but look
Njan.
Good.
Yeah.
So, when we go to the meeting, when you are going to go to the meeting, you can't go to the meeting. You can't go to the And in Bangele, anger too much, you understand? So, Angas, Wooting, a Kuruma Nova, and who's any way free, Nami Nagaling Guns, I'm gassing over. Yes, he's catching at the Nigaland dining of Sars Wooty, milling me, tattooing me again, you understand? So, I don't know.
No, ngiyakuzwa Ayanda, ngicela ulalele kodwa ngiyacabanga nokuthi sizozama ukuthi sikhlanganise no Casey emva kwale nkulumo ukuthi bakwazi ukuthi bakhulumisane nawe.
Ngiyabonga bhuti.
Okay. Engosi Ayanda. I mean, Nadine, I think it goes back to a question I had put to you. Mm-hmm. Ayanda basically there saying, you know, how can you be able to talk through to someone else about your problems? There's something that mm-hmm. she's been living with, and at times it just gives the spontaneous anger, and she doesn't become somebody quite pleasant to be around. And I do mm-hmm. think we know some people, and there are people listening who do get those moments of outbursts of anger, not because someone around them has done anything, but something has just triggered one thing or the other inside them. How can people condition themselves and prepare themselves to share their problems with other people to try and, you know, get over whatever it is that they're dealing with?
Listening to Ayanda speak is so deeply painful because you can hear the distress in the words, you know. And for me, I understand what she's saying in terms of, you know, we're being around someone and they're just so angry and the outbursts happen and all of that, because I think, you know, oftentimes
depression even, or just being overwhelmed, can manifest itself in strange ways, right? Do you sometimes think that depression means that someone is sad, right? But that's not necessarily what it is. And so I think, you know, sometimes we get so overwhelmed that we become snappy, right? And I think it's also a thing of not talking about what's going on, avoiding the issues, just keeping it, you know, bottled in all the time. But at the same time, you know, when we avoid issues, it doesn't go away. It's still in your subconscious. You still have to, you know, deal with it, just not the way you probably should, right? So for me, I would probably say to Ayanda, if you can journal, write down what you're feeling, it really, really helps just to support and get everything out. So sometimes, you know, you are so frustrated that trying to speak to someone, you might, you know, blow steam on the person, and it's not necessarily them doing something, and that's not fair either. But what I would recommend is, you know, maybe journal and then find someone to talk to, find a professional to talk to, call out to them, you know, call in like to hang out and just talk to someone and try and manage those feelings, because I think managing it will help not explode, right? Because I think that feeling of kind of exploding in the manner that she's talking about comes from not dealing with something, not talking about it, and it just becomes so overwhelming that eventually it's overwhelming, right? It's just explodes. So I would advise that she absolutely reaches out to someone, a professional, if she doesn't want to talk to someone she knows, and move from there, you know, address the issue.
Lerato, you said something quite interesting earlier when, you know, talking about attempting to understand depression and not just as sadness. At times, you know, we try to find a lot of crutches in life to help us, whether, you know, we always just want to go out for a party, you always want to have that wine, you always want to have that smoke, you want to have, we find distractions trying to understand what actually is wrong with us. We get those moments of a place of loneliness, a place of, you know, being overwhelmed, a place of actually not being sure what's happening with your life, what is going on. And then you just think, you know what, I'm going to go out, I'm going to try and always be around people. So you spoke about children and that they suddenly isolate. But at times there are people who suddenly become too outgoing. And it's a sign at times of trying to be out of your cocoon. How would you talk us through some of the coping mechanisms we probably try find as adults when we don't even know exactly what it is that we are dealing with? And how do I get to know that I need some help and professional assistance?
The first step towards anything is awareness. So the fact that you're not denying the fact that you have a problem, that is always the best step to start at. So a lot of the times when we go through a lot of issues in our lives, we go through elements of denial. And because of denial, we create other crutches, as you refer to it. So these crutches can be functional addiction, you know, where you are seen as the life of the party. So anytime that you're there, you'll be there making it rain, you know, splashing money everywhere, and there's all this alcohol. And there's also and that's also a form of overcompensating, you know, trying to cover up for the true extent in which one is trying to overcompensate for the true extent of your own humanity, you know, the own pain that you're supposed to be feeling. And there's also projection, where you start being aggressive towards other people, or you just start to hate on other people because they serve as triggers of your own emotional distress. You have to remember that we live in a more mechanistic society where we have adopted the belief that everything can be fixed or it can be cured. And any time that we encounter emotional symptoms such as emotional pain, distress, or discomfort, or anything that is out of our control, we often view them through the distorted lens of shame and which can interfere on our self-concept. So whenever anything interferes with our self-concept and also the society in which we live in, we tend to bandage things. Think of about a wound that is supposed to be bleeding, but yep. instead of letting it to bleed, you bandage it, you know, and you keep bandaging it for years. The reality is that that wound is not going to heal. It is only going to get septic. And the more it gets septic, the more it starts to spread. So it's going to affect different aspects of your life. So as I said, you know, there is functional addiction, overcompensation, but it's also regression where somebody starts to act in a childlike state and, you know, displacement. And displacement can also be a positive thing. So instead of...
Lerato, I'm losing that line a little. Can you just probably get closer to your mic or move a little?
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Yes. I think just to cut it short, it becomes important that we consistently become aware of our biological well-being, our psychological well-being, our social well-being, and our spiritual well-being. If at any moment we realize that we are losing track or one aspect of that element or component of well-being is lacking, then just like dominoes, it's going to start to impact on different aspects until we get to a point where we start to lose ourselves and fall into a black hole of mental health dysplasia.
Casey, I have a tweet here from Entle saying, I still say mental health is primary health. I wish our government can prioritize it. I suffer from mental health since my sexual assault incident. It's hard dealing with it. I mean, and I think Entle has been trying to dial in, so she's probably going to be on the line with us soon. Casey, how do we deal with the issue of mental health as primary health? Probably let's talk about, Lerato raised an important issue. Often find we talk about curative mental when we're dealing with mental health issues. How do we make sure that we talk of preventative mental health?
And that's so important. You know, even from the work that SADAG does, people are calling us and we're reacting and we're helping them when there's a problem or an issue. But we need to start and take, you know, a step back and say, how do we prevent this from happening? How do we encourage or promote mental wellness, like Lerato was mentioning? You know, everyone has mental health. Everyone should be doing something every day to improve or to look after their mental health. And I think this is where we need to take mental health back to the community, is that we're needing to talk about ways to manage stress, ways to cope with challenges, sharing support tools, and just educating people about their mental health and how, you know, self-care tips. All of this should be happening again. It should be taught to our children in primary school. It should be in every workplace where it's a priority. And again, it's making sure that mental health is in all of these spaces that we as South Africans are. And in our communities. And I think, again, that primary healthcare, absolutely, you know, from your mouth to the ears at the top levels, the decision-making levels, is that we're needing to prioritize mental health. You know, we, on paper, every clinic should be having mental health support services. But we know that in practice that doesn't happen. And that's really important, that if someone in a community is saying, hey, I've been through a trauma, you know, it should be at every police station. If someone's been robbed or sexual violence or GBV, that they should get mental health support. So again, we're having to prioritize mental health, making it more accessible, and promoting mental wellness, I think, is key. And just again, talking about it, educating people, it should be, and I said this before, we need to normalize mental health and that it's okay to look after your mental health. And if we can start doing that and more people are actually making sure that they're doing something every day to look after their mental health, for those that have a mental illness who are needing to access hospitals or professionals, that those services are in place. We know that mental health affects so many South Africans. Therefore, it should be a primary healthcare goal.
Nadine, let me just read this tweet to you, and perhaps you might have some thoughts on it. It's from Lorato, saying perhaps one of the first places we need to start acknowledging is many human beings do not know how to talk about or express their emotions. Mental health needs us to be able to express ourselves even when we think we are inarticulate about our emotions, saying that people are quite scared about feeling misunderstood when they express their emotions.
Yeah, I mean, I think that unfortunately is the reality, right? People are so fearful, and you know, someone mentioned, I don't know if it was Cassie, you spoke about feeling weak, right, and feeling judged and all of that. And this happens even before someone even goes and speaks to someone. They start this process in their head about how, you know, no one can understand, I'm going to be judged. You know, all of those thoughts start firing in your head about how what you're saying is going to be received. And so I think it is quite important what that thing means, because if we are in a position where you are really feeling like, you know, no one understands you, what you're saying doesn't make sense, you can't articulate it well enough, it makes it that much harder to get out of that space in your head. And so I think what happens is, because we don't talk about these issues, it becomes a situation where people think that they are the only people going through that. But the likelihood is that so many others are feeling exactly the way you're feeling, but no one talks about it, so you just feel isolated and alone. So, you know, I think just over and above, I think that's a big, big part of what happens and why people don't necessarily want to reach out and talk to people around them. Or anyone for that matter, because they just feel like they won't be heard, they won't be understood. And I think at a fundamental level, what everyone wants is just that, to be heard and understood.
Okay, let's listen in. Enhle, good morning.
Good morning, Lukhona, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you doing?
I'm good, I'm great show, Lukhona, great show. Great conversation, great
Thank
topic.
You.
I'm impressed. Lukhona,
thank you for being part of the ecosystem to build it up.
Thank you. Lukhona, I was gang raped while jogging. Lukhona, the amount of gaslighting we're getting from subs when you are reporting the case. First day, they are going to be pushing. Second day, third day, fourth day, they drop the ball. I had to investigate my own case. Up to today, I don't know who did what happened to me. After everything I've done, the ID parade, I'm getting so many triggers. You know, that thing has stopped my life, has stopped me from living. I had to deregister for my course. I had to distance myself from my friends. I'm dying inside. Every day I get triggers, I am literally dying inside. The truth is, we are a happy nation, but we are dying inside. I'm personally dying inside. Every day I wake up, I look at my daughter, I'm like, one day, maybe it's going to happen to her. So much depression. Our South African police needs to prioritize. Our government needs to prioritize mental health. Mental health is primary health. I don't know which day they are going to wake up and learn that it's happening to women, it's happening to kids. Kids are killing themselves purely from mental illness. It's sad. Thank you, Lukhona.
Enhle, thank you so much for trusting us with that story and sharing your personal experience. Thank you, Enhle. Lerato, I mean, I'm just a bit of at a loss for words to tell you the truth. After that call from Enhle, she says, I'm dying inside. It's invisible. Nobody sees it. And probably every day she tries so hard to wake up, be functional, be seen, dress up. And I know that because she tweets on the show, she tweets on numerous shows in the station, but she's saying she's dying inside. How do you talk to Enhle after that, Lerato?
yeah, that was a really emotionally disturbing conversation, or, you know, to think that, I mean, she has had to experience, you know, double violence or double trauma. So, you know, you go over to people of power that can be in charge of helping you in terms of your case, but you then experience ongoing systemic and structural violence as well. And this shines the spotlight on the deadening or the annihilation of the capacity of other people to experience, to be able to experience empathy for the other. Have we become so dehumanized as a nation that we lack the capacity to experience empathy for the other, the capacity to be able to look at the other as a human being, as a full human being that has got emotions and feelings as well. So that was quite disturbing. So in terms of what she's going through, this is an extremely traumatic situation for one to go through. And it becomes pivotal that she engages in ongoing therapy to be able to help her to get to a point of corrective emotional experience. And I'm saying corrective emotional experience because, unfortunately, when it comes to mental health, it becomes important that we start to recognize that we need to be careful about using the term healing, because in mental health, there will consistently be triggers. But however, when we get to a point of corrective emotional experience, when we do get those triggers, we already have coping skills to learn to deal with those triggers. The thing about trauma is that even though the event has passed, your mind stays within the same moment. So it gives that repetitive cycle to it, which means that you stay in a frozen moment. And therapy becomes quite pivotal, you know, to help to get to a point of managing those emotional symptoms and distress.
Casey, no doubt. I mean, we it's not just a conversation for academic purposes or for the sake of having a conversation. We are dealing with people's lives here, and one of the things in our society is just the absence of safe spaces, safe physical spaces. Entle was jogging.
I mean, these are horrific things, and I think as just humans, just to be compassionate. People, you know, have been through so much, and just hearing that story, you know, we've all kind of can respond to it, and it's incredibly sad, and it's so heavy to carry that and to navigate that every single day. You know, people who are dealing with all this stuff are already vulnerable, right? And now having to try fight for the system to work just makes it so much more difficult to cope. And I think, you know, to the callers that have come out and shared their stories and put a voice to the struggle and the experience. I say thank you, but from SADAG's point is that we definitely want to reach out to them. So, you know, if the producer could send me the details afterwards, I'd love to get a counselor to call them and chat and just to support them and see if we can help them. Or no one should be suffering in silence and to feel all alone. And I think this is where we need to just, as human beings, just be kinder. We don't always know the battles that people are fighting on a daily basis. And if we can offer that, hey, I'm here for you, or, you know, tell me how you're really doing. I think all of us could do so much better in supporting people who are dealing with these kinds of issues and problems on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Nadine, I know we are almost out of time, but last bite on your side. What is the one thing you'd say everybody should wake up and do to try and preserve the mental health of everybody around them?
You know, I think that this is such a subjective question, but I think the most important thing is just to take a second. I think our lives are so busy, it's so rushed, you know, we're always hurrying off somewhere and, you know, all of those things. Do one thing in the morning that is just for you, right? And a quiet, you know, whether it's, you know, just listening to your favorite song and having that, you know, internal quiet moment, or journaling, or if you are someone who prays, do that. Light a candle, have a cup of coffee, by yourself and just be in that moment, be present, you know, meditate, even if it's for 5 minutes, I think it completely changes the way your day goes and the way you experience other people, even if, you know, things are not all that great. I think those are, that would be my solid piece of advice.
Nadine, Lerato, and Casey, thank you so much for helping me steer this ship on this very important conversation on mental health.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lukona.
Okay,
yeah, thank you for making it such an important topic and giving us the chance to talk about it. It's been incredibly moving. Thank you.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.